All right, Alexander, we have some results in the Georgia runoff race for the Senate. It looks like Warnock has been declared the winner, and that's been declared by a decision desk. And Loeffler is, she's not conceding. She says that she'll fight until Friday, but it looks like his lead is pretty substantial at this point. Ossoff, they're giving Ossoff about a 90, 96, 98% chance that he has won as well. He has just declared victory, but his race is much closer to Purdue. And from what I understand from Georgia election officials, they will finish wrapping up all the vote count on Friday. They still have a lot of military ballots and a few thousand votes here and there that are outstanding that they need to count. But many of the experts are saying that Ossoff's lead is just enough so that it would be very, very difficult for Purdue to somehow overtake Ossoff. So what do you have? You have both the Democrat senators who have appeared to win this this runoff, and you have a Senate that is now 50 Democrats, 50 Republicans, and one Kamala Harris as the tiebreak vote. What do you make of this?
Well, I'm going to assume that the Democrats are going to win both seats because that's the way that it looks at the moment. I predict, by the way, that certainly in the Ossoff-Purdue case, there's going to be legal challenges, and that's a distinct possibility. But I'm going to assume that the Democrats will win both seats, and we will have an absolute tie between Republicans and Democrats, with Kamala Harris having the casting vote. I still think, looking at this overall, that Mitch McConnell and the Republican establishment will be not too unhappy with this result, because I think that this Democratic majority in both the Senate and the House now looks extremely fragile, and relying on the vice president's casting vote to get critical decisions through is going to be extremely problematic going forward. So I think that McConnell will not be too bothered by this. I'm talking about McConnell, because I also predict that McConnell is going to use this result for his own political purposes. And he's going to blame Donald Trump for the outcome. He's going to say that Donald Trump's activities over the last few weeks since the November election are the reason why the Republicans have lost the two seats in the Senate. And I think he's going to point to the fact that there was a low turnout, apparently, in the election in Georgia. He's going to point to the dissipation of energy. This is the argument that the Washington Examiner, which is very close to the Republican establishment, are making now, saying that, you know, the Republicans dissipated their energy by fighting each other over the presidential election when they should have been focused on winning the senatorial results. So I think that, as I said, from McConnell's point of view, this is perhaps a blow. I think he'd have liked to remain Senate majority leader, but I think he can blame Donald Trump for the outcome, and he's still in a very strong position with 50 Republicans in the Senate and with the Democrat lead in the House cut significantly. So, and bear in mind that it was becoming fairly obvious to me in the run-up to this vote that there were some Republicans who were more interested in pursuing their battle with Donald Trump than they were in winning these runoffs. And the person I'm thinking of is Raffensperger, who obviously is an establishment Republican in Georgia, who took this extraordinary decision right on the eve of the election of publishing this telephone conversation, the audio of that telephone conversation he had with Donald Trump, in the full knowledge that the Democrats would use it in the way that, in fact, they have used it, and that the media would use it in the way that the media have used it. So that was a very strange thing to do in the run-up to these runoffs, I can't imagine that he did it without consulting higher up people within the Republican Party. I don't believe he did it on a whim. It's interesting anyway that that phone call was recorded, presumably either by him or by somebody connected to him. We haven't really had a clear explanation of that either. So it looks to me as if McConnell, who, to be very clear, at this moment in time, his priority is to push Donald Trump aside, has a outcome that he can live with.
Yeah. This whole exercise has been not about winning Georgia. It has been about destroying Donald Trump. I think you're exactly right with the way Raffensperger and Kemp have behaved. They also gave a lot of leeway to Stacey Abrams. They conceded a lot to Stacey Abrams in her shenanigans that she was up to, and we have to be careful what we say. But she was doing a lot of crazy, crazy stuff that Raffensperger and Kemp signed off on. I mean, they didn't impede her whatsoever, which is, if the United States had a normal two-party system, you would imagine that the Republican structure in Georgia would do everything in its power to impede the Democrat structure in Georgia from doing what they were doing. But they just stepped aside and they let Stacey Abrams roll all over them. And that was on purpose. That wasn't because they're weak or they're dumb or anything else like that. That was on purpose because McConnell told them to, because at the end of the day, this is the exact position McConnell wanted to be in. We've been saying this for a long time. McConnell wanted either a 1-1 split or a 2-0 loss, and he got exactly what he wanted. McConnell is now a very, very strong minority. Very strong minority.
Exactly. That's exactly correct. And that's exactly the position he prefers to be in. I think the point about McConnell is that he is a force always for obstruction. He's not a creative force. He actually, he and Paul Ryan, when Trump was president in control of Congress, and Trump had a much stronger control, the Republicans had a much bigger majorities in the House and in the Senate when Trump was inaugurated than Biden now does. When Trump was president and wanted to do various things, McConnell and Ryan didn't help him. And they're not people who come forward with new ideas and who want to advance things. They want to block things. And as a strong minority, which is what they now are, they're in a very good position to do that. Now, there's been some comment about the fact that Biden is going to be able to get the nominations he wants. I don't think McConnell is particularly bothered about blocking Biden's nominations. From McConnell's point of view, having left-wing people in the Biden administration makes it easier for him to mobilize opposition to Biden and the Democratic administration in Congress and to claw back positions in the 2022 midterms, by which point I think he calculates that he will have the Republican Party once more fully under control. His priority at the moment, exactly as we said, is to stop Donald Trump. And coming back to Stacey Abrams, it's fascinating to see how the Republican establishment in Georgia, as you rightly say, let her do all kinds of things, at the same time as they were resisting to an extraordinary degree Donald Trump and being so critical of him.
Yeah, and we saw a lot of the same shenanigans and charades, like stopping in the middle of the night that we saw on November 3rd. I mean, it was a complete copy-paste, pretty much. Complete copy-paste. They're not even the least bit creative about how they go about things now. They're just doing it flat out in front of our faces in broad daylight.
Well, indeed, exactly. I mean, there will be legal challenges and there will be all that, but nobody should have any expectations of this. We've seen that legal challenges don't get anywhere. So I don't think we should expect anything there.
So if Trump doesn't manage to do anything heroic by, say, by this evening for us, morning, afternoon for people in the United States, for our viewers in the United States, then I predict that we are essentially looking at what I like to call maybe a presidential committee, Schumer, Pelosi, McConnell. So the United States is going to be run by this committee of three with an Obama third term. And we see that with the appointment of Victoria Nuland, who's another Obama flunky, who has also been appointed into the Biden State Department. And of course, you're going to have Biden and Harris, who are going to be empty suits, empty puppets. So I really think this is kind of like a Politburo, a very small Politburo that will be running the United States exactly, I think, as they wanted it. I think people are kidding themselves if they don't think that Pelosi, Schumer, McConnell weren't sitting down and weren't planning all this out. And I also predict that don't be surprised if you see a lot of the Republican, let's say the conservative right mainstream media, go on full attack mode against Donald Trump as well, because I still think their goal is to make sure they absolutely get him completely out of the picture and completely discredited. And I think they're going to go hard after him. Both left and right is going to go on the attack against Trump.
Absolutely, that's exactly what they're going to do, and I think you've summed it up exactly right. It's absolutely clear that if we're looking at the people, the political, the political veterans, if you like, the political class in Washington, this distinction people make between Democrats and Republicans doesn't exist on many issues, and there will be not exactly a Politburo, certainly an informal grouping, which, to be very clear, will include McConnell. In fact, he'll be the single most powerful figure within it, which will be in essential control of the government of the United States. And that there's no doubt. I mean, it reminds me, this is like the restoration, if you like. It's you've gone through this period with Donald Trump, who came in, disrupted the political establishment. And now they've closed ranks against him. They've managed to find ways to get rid of him. They've done the things they did in the election, both the presidential election and the one in Georgia. And what they hope and expect to be able to do is to return things to normal. And of course, when we talk about a political class, we talk about the media class also, which is a part of the political class. It reminds me very much. There's a famous quote that comes from an Italian novel, The Leopard, written by an Italian aristocrat, an oligarch, if you like, but one who is very cynical about the way Italy was run, the Prince of Lampedusa, which was that everything must change so it can remain the same. So, in effect, what we now have is a Democrat administration taking over from a Republican administration. But from a perspective of a Republican establishment, that is a return to the same which existed before 2016, a return to the world as they see it, that, about, there was that, that existed under Obama and George W. Bush and Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush and all these presidencies. Very good, comfortable world for them. And the disruption that Donald Trump represented has been excluded and banished to the margins. So it's returned to the world as normal. Things may appear to be different in that we have a nominal Democrat in the White House, but in reality, it's back to the normal world that they've always known and want to see.
Yeah, people forget that Biden and Harris are colleagues with McConnell and Schumer, so they get along perfectly well, all of them. They're all buddies. And finally, real quick, a lot of people talk about the stacking of the Supreme Court or adding DC and Puerto Rico as two new states. Flooding the country with 20, 30, 40 million immigrants. And then, of course, the big one is getting rid of the filibuster. I don't know if the Democrats, I don't know what they'll be able to pull off on all those things. Maybe on the immigrant side, yes, they'll probably get a lot of immigrants in. The two states things, I don't know. Packing the court, I don't know. But I'll make a prediction, and you can come and make your predictions. I don't think they're going to touch the filibuster. That's my own personal. I could be wrong. I could be completely wrong. I don't think they're going to touch the filibuster 60 votes because I think it's too profitable for both parties. I think it cuts both ways. When Jeff Bezos wants legislation done, or he wants his contract with the CIA approved, he needs to go to one of the parties and find those extra 7, 8, 9 votes so that he could get everything through. And I think for both parties, that's just too damn profitable for them to just give it up and move it back to a simple 51 majority. I don't know what you think.
I think that's exactly right. I think I predict exactly the same. I think the Democrats will take a much more relaxed view on immigration than Donald Trump did, because to be very clear, that was Donald Trump's policy. He had a protectionist America First a policy which sought to protect American jobs, and which was hostile to transferring industries to other countries, and which was hostile to immigration, which would undermine American workers. And that was his policy. It's not the policy of the Democratic Party. I don't think it's very much the policy of the Republican Party either, actually. I think that from their point of view, yes, it's true that some of these votes of these immigrants undermine Republican majorities in certain states. But I don't think it's really something that Republicans have shown much enthusiasm or desire to really change. And I think also what Trump has shown them is that they can actually win some of those Latino votes. So I don't think there's going to be a big battle on that, but I think we will see more immigration. But we will not see all these big institutional changes that people have been talking about: patting the Supreme Court, abolishing the filibuster, giving Puerto Rico, Washington D.C., their own state rights. Because I don't think anybody in the political system has any real interest in this. The political system, as far as they are concerned, provided they're able to control it, works for them very well as it is, including the filibuster. The filibuster is the perfect way of increasing your leverage over your donors and your lobbyists. So why do away with it? I would have
Right.
thought they have every incentive to keep it.
To keep it.
It
And more
includes
wars. And more wars.
more wars and all of that. Well, I mean,
Bipartisan wars.
bringing people like Victoria Nuland back into the center of US diplomacy, bringing her back into the center of the State Department. Apparently, she's going to be given a very high post there. Well, that tells you that more wars are most definitely on the agenda.
Incredible. I've never seen anywhere in the world where you can fail so much and still get promoted up.
Well, it's so interesting you say that, because, of course, in business in the US, not in all business, I mean, some companies, obviously, people are protected, but in the American system has tended not to. It's been very, it's historically always been very meritocratic. People who fail get pushed out, people who succeed get supported. That's always been the American way. Well, not anymore, it seems, and certainly not in the political system, and certainly not in the province of foreign policy, where the more you fail, the more you succeed. It's very paradoxical and very strange and very contrary to the way in which the United States was built up.
Yeah, just to remind all our viewers, if you're not aware, it was Victoria Nuland that had the famous phone call F the EU in Ukraine, and she pretty much was instrumental in destroying Ukraine. She was involved in Libya. She also was involved in the Steele dossier as well. I mean, it's
Absolutely,
just
yeah.
a complete disaster.
Absolutely correct. That's entirely right. Yes. So, we bring if you bring her back in, it's not just bringing into back into the center of American diplomacy a rather controversial person, some who will do all kinds of things. It's also a powerful signal to the rest of the world. I mean, the Russians, to give an example, They do not regard Victoria Nuland as any sort of friend. They regard her as a dangerous adversary, and they will be drawing conclusions from this.
Yeah, I'll draw one conclusion and we'll wrap up the video. I'll draw it. I used to think that maybe it's time for Putin to start handing off the reins of power slowly, slowly, and make a transition. After all these moves, God, I hope Putin doesn't leave. Really, I hope he doesn't leave now.
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, we will certainly see what happens. I mean, it's all very interesting. And speaking of Putin, and we had a very interesting conversation with Angela Merkel the other day, which we'll need to unpack. But I got the impression that the Germans are actually a bit unsettled by some of these moves in the US also, which is in an interesting way. But that's a topic for another day. Yeah. The world is watching all these events in the United States. They're calculating, they're drawing their own conclusions. The one thing I can say with certainty is that nobody is impressed by what they see.
No. Everyone should be absolutely frightened
by
what we're seeing. And we're not even 2 weeks into January.
Well, indeed.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Alexander Verkurs, thank you very much. Guys, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button as well. Also subscribe to us on BitChute, on Rumble, and on Odyssey as well. And PayPal, Patreon, Subscribestar, Bitcoin. You'll find those links down below. And you'll also find the link to Alexander's new channel. You'll find that link down below as well. You'll find the link to my channel as well down below in the description box. And you'll also find the link to the Durant Shop as well, where your purchase of our merchandise really helps out this channel, because I got a feeling with all the new wars and regime change, color revolutions that are going to be starting up, we're going to be kept very busy, and we're going to be very, we're going to be in the thick of things, and we're going to be embattled, that's for sure.
We certainly are, absolutely. So you can support us by coming to our shop, getting the great things you will find there, our wonderful mugs, our great shirts, our sweatshirts, our hoodies, our hats. And please remember, as Alex said, to find us on our other platforms, BitChute, Odyssey, Library, Rumble, and also support us through Patreon, Subscribestar, and PayPal. And please do come and watch us on our other channels, Alex's channel and mine, links below. And please join us on our next program and check your subscription to this channel too.
All right, Alexander Merkurs, thank you very much. Till next time, everybody, take care.